The birth of pups to the famous wolf OR7 and his mate last year delighted people who'd been following OR7's long journey across the western Oregon and even California landscape. Finding a mate marked a milestone for the wolf and was symbolic for his relatives across the state. There are now enough wolves in Oregon to bring about changes in wolf management. The state Fish and Wildlife Commission recently heard from and gave direction to the people responsible for gray wolf management in Oregon. Our guest is at the top of that food chain. Russ Morgan is the wolf coordinator at Oregon Fish and Wildlife and our guest once again on The Exchange. Russ, welcome back.
Good morning.
It's good to have you here. You presented information on gray wolf status to the Fish and Wildlife Commission 2 weeks ago. Tell us about the purpose and where the process goes from here.
Sure. The purpose is really an evaluation of where wolves are from a conservation perspective, how wolves are doing and where they are with regards to the Endangered Species Act. And I'm referring only to the state Endangered Species Act, not the federal. And essentially, the process that we have begun now was really one that was called for 10 years ago when our wolf plan, Oregon's wolf plan, was first put together. And we reached a certain conservation threshold that we would initiate the process to at least evaluate where wolves are and how they're doing. And so that's what this is. It's the start of a process. There's still a fair amount of process to go. But it's a look at the status of the species in relation to the Oregon Endangered Species Act delisting criteria.
Okay, I guess here's where a lot of the confusion arises, is the differences between the state Endangered Species Act and the federal, and then the different requirements they might have for protection.
Yeah, they're very similar requirements, but they're certainly applied slightly differently from state or federal law. Yeah.
All right, so when the wolf plan was first developed 10 years ago, I mean, when you chose the numbers, I mean, these were goals that you thought could be attainable. And in fact, essentially, the wolf is on schedule. Is that the best way to put it?
Really, it's a great way to put it. And in fact, I've always been a bit astonished that the wolf plan, you know, back when it was made, there were no wolves. There were no resident wolves in the state of Oregon. And so the people that created, a group of people that crafted the plan, sort of had to make some predictions, and I've always been astounded at how good those predictions were. The plan essentially has tracked as scheduled. We've got to this point. Even some of the predictions, such as wolves would establish more dominantly in the eastern part of the state and less in the western part of the state initially, even those types of predictions have come true. So, yes, it's tracked very well.
Were the numbers then, Russ, just based on wolf dispersal patterns from other places? They were not introduced in Oregon, obviously. They came in from Idaho. But,
reintroduced, right.
So were the dispersal numbers what really kind of guided what you thought would happen?
Well, certainly early on in a population, the growth of a population is very heavily related to dispersal. So our wolves came from Idaho, for example. You're correct, they were not reintroduced. So they came on their own from Idaho. All of our known wolves came from Idaho. And so essentially then those numbers, those conservation objective numbers, came from just basic biology or population parameters, such as the influx of animals through dispersal, survival, reproduction, how wolves fare wherever they are. A number of parameters is essentially what we look at when we talk about these kind of numbers. So the other thing I think is important about these numbers is they're a fairly, it's often referred to as a fairly low threshold. At the same time, these are a minimum number in order to trigger this evaluation process. They don't really represent a management number or an optimum number, if you will.
Okay, so let's parse that just a bit. So it's not a target of we're going to get this many wolves in Oregon, but you're just saying at this level we will review our plans?
Yeah, essentially it's kind of two phases. It's one, it's at this level where they are now, it's to evaluate what would happen to them. Really the question of the day here is what would happen to wolves if the ESA protections that they now have were lifted? Or removed, and that's that evaluation. The other part of it, though, is the optimum numbers, and really that's not a statement of how many wolves we will have. It's a matter of management, future management, a wolf plan. Really, we have a process in place that sort of guides future management, optimum numbers, how many wolves there might be or will be. So they are two different things. One is merely looking at protections now, what would happen if they are lifted, and the other is looking at the future.
So, okay, a lot of this is looking forward, obviously, as you just mentioned, but in looking backward, are there any really good guesses about how many wolves there were 150 years ago in Oregon?
There's really no real good guesses. Certainly we know that wolves occurred more or less statewide, certainly higher densities in some areas, mostly forested areas, lower density in open shrub or grassland areas, but they occurred fairly regularly. Now, the reason we don't know a lot about it is because, of course, the persecution of wolves early on really predated any sort of objective surveys. There really was no survey or formal way to tally these things. We just know anecdotally where wolves, for example, bounty records. We know bounty records. We know some of the documented accounts. So it's very difficult to know from a scientific standpoint how many there were, the type of densities that there were. Probably the only thing we can safely say is they were fairly ubiquitous and they occupied a lot of Oregon.
Bounty records, that's an interesting place to go. I mean, and how much did people get paid for wolves, and for how long was there a bounty, and was it pretty much uniform across the state?
Well, bounties started early in the last century, and essentially the last bountied wolf, I believe, was 1946 in Oregon. So there was a period of time then, you know, a little over 40-year period of time when they were bountied. Our plan has some specific records, total records. I don't recall them right offhand, but a fair number of wolves. And, of course, by about the 30s and early 40s, wolves were virtually gone from the state.
I guess when your goal is to get to zero, which it was at that time, nobody particularly cares about what the numbers are on the way there.
Well, I think you make a good point, and you're right. It's important, I think, for all of us to remember that the reason wolves were gone in the first place is because we tacitly or intentionally eradicated them, which sort of becomes important as we look at then what do they require to do well in our environment today. Probably the biggest thing that they require is not to be tacitly killed. And so that's really an important factor. In other words, wolves are pretty capable from a habitat standpoint, and they're not real specific about how they use landscapes, and they don't have a specific niche requirement. Really what they do is they require to stay alive, and then they're fairly successful after that.
Russ Morgan's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's the Wolf Coordinator for ODFW, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about wolves in Oregon and how they're reaching benchmarks that indicate changes in future management. Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 throughout the listening area, 800-838-3760. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So the number we hit, we're at 77 wolves in Oregon now, is that right?
That's the number that we tallied at the end of last calendar year, 2014. So there's a few more than that we know of today, but we use 77 as our population figure, the most recent.
And are these wolves that are known for sure, or is this taking an estimate based on the ones you know?
They are. They're actually the first. They're what we know. We actually have information, direct, accountable information to show that those 77 wolves exist. They're not estimates. They're really then a minimum population survey. And what that means is the population can't be less than that, but it certainly can be more. And we expect it to be more, actually. There's more than 77 wolves in Oregon. And one of the reasons there's more is because we know that a certain percentage of every wolf population that exists is comprised of lone individuals, lone wolves, if you will, non-territorial individuals that make up a part of every wolf population. We just don't account for them very well. So really then ours is a minimum count, and there's anywhere from probably 10 to 20% more than that number in the state.
Russ, how was the line chosen? I know that in the documents supplied to the Fish and Wildlife Commission, there's the wolf classification delisting line. east of which the wolf is federal delisted, west of which it's federally endangered. And it's a line that pretty much goes straight from Pendleton to Burns and then trails off toward the southeast. How is the decision made that that's where the line would be?
Yeah, that line was chosen as a representation of dispersal, distance of dispersal. And essentially, at the time wolves were proposed to be delisted federally in Idaho, there were no wolves, known wolves in Oregon. And so what they did is they used a figure of three times the average dispersal distance, which by their data was about 60 miles. Three times that then would be 180 miles. And that's where that line represents 180 miles, roughly, from the nearest known wolves in Idaho at that time. In other words, it's saying, well, it's not just where wolves are, it's where, you know, they occur in a bigger area than what we document them in. And that's how that line was chosen.
I have this image of wildlife biologists high-fiving each other over how good their math was. Was there ever a moment quite like that?
Well, it, like I said, it is. There's been a number of times when we've sort of, this is all very difficult at times, but there are a few times when we look at each other and say, wow, it's impressive how the people that crafted our plan kind of had it right. They figured it out, and they really did have it right. The way wolves are progressing in Oregon, where they're establishing, where they're doing well, and how they're moving across the state is just right according to prediction.
Again, we're talking to Russ Morgan, the wolf coordinator at Oregon Fish and Wildlife. Got a couple of calls here. Here's Jeff in Roseburg. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hey, Russ, I've talked to you before. I wanted to say I work in a gun store, and I've heard many reports out here in Douglas County in the west of wolves spotting out here that I know are not being counted. And then, but I also, you know, all the comments on the radio and stuff and the talk shows are about worrying about livestock, but how are you seeing any effects on the deer and elk populations?
Okay, good question.
Sure. Well, two things there. Good questions, both. One is that wolves not being counted. You know, there's always, just as I explained a minute ago, there's always the ability for there to be more wolves than what we know of. I would say, however, though, and I've said this many times in many different forums, it's pretty hard to hide a pack of wolves for very long. There's a lot of, they make a lot of noise, they travel great distances, they leave a lot of tracks on the ground. And so I don't think you have packs of wolves generally for too awful long before they're discovered. So A, there is more wolves than we know, but probably not by a whole lot. As our population goes up, though, that disparity will increase. There will be more that we don't know about. The second part of your question is about the livestock. And interestingly, you know, our depredation number, even our number of investigations, our number of actual depredations of livestock, decreased last year. Well, it's pretty easy then to start making some general conclusions. We have to be real careful about that. We had very few cattle killed in the year 2014, and so far this year, we've had none. So I think those are all good signs. We have a lot of folks out in areas where wolves exist that are doing a lot of effort on non-lethal measures, and that's become a very important part of all of this. At the same time, make no mistake about it, you know, there will be some livestock depredation as time goes on. That seems to be just a typical part of wolf management.
The question about deer and elk and the ungulates, I know that much has been said, particularly on this program, about the effect, for example, in Yellowstone National Park, where the riparian zones are very different now because the elk don't get a chance to browse there any old time they like because there's always the chance that wolves are going to show up. And I wonder if we're starting to see any changes in habitats in Oregon that are clearly reflecting the presence of wolves.
Yeah, my apologies. I missed part of that question earlier. And it is, you know, it's a little early in Oregon to tell. That's a very important part of, or a component of wolf management, is how wolves interact with their primary prey species, which in most areas it is elk and then deer. And so at the same time, so far in Oregon, we've had fairly low densities. The areas that have had wolves the longest in northeast Oregon, we really haven't been able to see. We do track these these deer and elk populations every year. We have not been able to see any effects and really wouldn't be expected to mathematically in just a few years. So the other thing that's important to remember, so I guess Oregon as a whole right now, have we seen any effects of having wolves? The simplest answer would be no. At the same time, we still have to be mindful as the wolf population grows, as wolves become established in these areas over a long period of time, that can change. And really, that's going to be a key part of our management, is to be able to detect that change and monitor that. Deer and elk are a very important part of Oregon culture and a very important part of for a lot of people in the state of Oregon. So haven't been any effects that we've really been able to document so far. But that doesn't mean that there won't be.
Here's another call from Julie in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Russ Morgan, who's the Wolf Coordinator at Oregon Fish and Wildlife.
Hi, good morning. Thank you. I just don't know if you already said this, but I was wondering, by delisting the wolves as endangered, does that mean that people can go out and hunt them and it's open season on them, or is it only for purposes, you know, to keep the cattle from being killed, and because you're still studying them, right? So it seems like that would be quite a factor if people could go out and just hunt wolves openly. That's my question. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Julie.
Yeah, great question, and probably one of the most important questions in all of this. I think there is a common perception that delisting means kind of the doors come open and we're somehow killing wolves, whether it's through hunting or other types of take. Oregon's wolf plan is still in place. It's important to remember it's still in place before delisting. So today it would be in place after delisting. So really then, if wolves become delisted, there would be no immediate management changes because of that. In other words, wolves would be just as protected the day before as the day after delisting. And I think that's an important, you know, of course, various states all around the country have had differing management programs, and I know that people interested in wolves watch those programs. Well, Oregon, it's important to remember that Oregon has its own program, and that is documented in our plan. And I encourage people to understand or at least become familiar with what those protections are. Now, having said that, there is some potential take once we get to phase three. That's the next phase of wolf management, and that is in cases where we have chronic livestock depredation or we do see declines in deer and elk herds or prey populations or excessive declines, then that even in those cases, that take would be targeted. It wouldn't just be sort of open, general-type hunting. In fact, our plan specifically states Oregon will not have general season hunting. So very important differences. Oregon is a little different than some of the other states.
All right, so with the 77 wolves, you've arrived at phase two where there's no take. In phase three, should you get there would be take, but not a wolf season.
There would be take, but it would only be in response to certain things. It would not just be a take in general because we can. It would be targeted take to alleviate a problem, and that problem, of course, would be one of those two things, chronic depredation or impacts to big game.
Russ Morgan, what kinds of additional tools does Oregon Fish and Wildlife get from the legislature in allocations to avoid conflicts between wolves and people who have issues with wolves or livestock? For example, is there a fund to pay for additional fencing or electric fencing to keep wolves away from livestock?
Yeah, the state has a proactive compensation fund. Proactive meaning it's not just for compensation for wolf killed losses. It's also for payment to assist livestock producers in implementing non-lethals before they have losses. So that program has been in place now for I believe 3 years. It's been used. Of course, we haven't had a lot of depredation. So most of the funding has been used for the non-lethal measures, by far, actually. Most of it's been used for non-lethal measures, with a smaller proportion of it just used for the actual payouts.
Right. At the risk of going totally apples and oranges on you, I was trying to get some numbers on spotted owls because we talked recently about the fact that there are people who want the spotted owls to get reclassified from threatened to endangered. There are 1,200 of them in Oregon by the count of the Defenders of Wildlife, but we're talking about easing the way things are dealt with wolves at the number of 77. And I'm just trying to figure out, is there a desire just to keep the wolves much further spread apart?
There really isn't, because remember that number, whether it's 1,200 or 77, then that number isn't a number designed to keep the wolves at that number. It's, that doesn't represent a population limit or cap. Really, then, what it is the difference in those numbers becomes the difference in the biology of the species. Wolves have different requirements than, say, in your example, spotted owls. And so the numbers would be different just because the biology is different. It is a fairly low number, but this kind of gets, again, to our conversation earlier, where it's important that we understand that 77 wolves, if wolves were delisted at this number, we do not expect, we don't expect them to stay at this number. We expect that number to go up. In fact, we predict a growth rate of about right now it's about 1.4, so 41% per year growth, and we expect a minimum growth rate of about 7% a year. So regardless of the listing protections, we expect wolves to continue, the population to continue to increase. A little bit different than the spotted owl projection.
Russ, before we go, I know there were efforts to recapture OR7 to put a new radio collar on him. I wonder if there's a continued effort there for either OR7 or his pups or his mate.
There is. There will be. We've been working this spring on some capture attempts. Sometimes they just take time, so no information to date about it. At the same time, we'll continue to try to put a collar on, and that's called for in our wolf plan. So we'll continue to try to see if we can get another caller in that pack.
Okay.
Better information.
We'll check with you down the road when the wolf plan is finalized and moving forward. Russ Morgan is the wolf coordinator at Oregon Fish and Wildlife. Thanks again for joining us.
You're welcome.